Welcome back to the Cruise Corner podcast. For this episode, I'm going to be pulling information from three different books I read recently, and I'll make sure to leave those references in the episode details. So if anybody would like to explore the books further on their own, they can. The reason why I'm combining these three books together is because I didn't really want to do three long, drawn-out episodes summarizing entire books, because I would really like people to check them out for themselves so they can get whatever works for them out of those books. And so I really just wanted to focus on kind of pulling some topics from those that they all had something in common. And one of those things was that they either investigated or acknowledged that there were differences between service members, specifically between male and female service members, and kind of touched on our treatment of one another in the veteran community and what that is doing to us in terms of our healing and feeling like we can reach out and get help and kind of feeding into the suicide epidemic that's taking place. And I catch hell anytime I make women military personnel or women veterans the focal point of any episode. I understand that this is a topic that is widely challenged and people hold strong opinions about women's ability to serve. And while I do catch crap for it, this is the thing. At the end of the day, I'm a female veteran, and I feel like by keeping quiet about certain things that take place or took place in the military is a disservice to my fellow sisters, as well as to those women that may join down the road. Change doesn't happen if nobody knows what is wrong with the current system. So if we don't talk about it, change does not occur. It's pretty simple. For whatever reason, people do not like hearing that serving is different, especially for women. People don't want to talk about the varying transition struggles that take place or how we face different treatment from doctors, our leaders, the public. The biggest thing I've tried to reiterate through Cruise Corner is that the struggles all veterans face, all people face at that, are true and valid. And that in the veteran community, speaking about these struggles, especially those if they're unrelated to war, it does not take away from anyone else's war story. Speaking up and getting help does not destroy our military. It does not make our branches look weak. What is destroying our military is allowing horrible shit to take place within the ranks and then forcing silence and then promoting the crap out of bad behavior and just allowing it to continue. There, in my opinion, there should be no contest when it comes to sharing our stories or making our disability claims, lending a hand, but we turn everything into a contest nowadays. That's just not in the veteran community or in the military. That is just, I guess, I don't know, promoted by social media because we're so in each other's shit now. But things get missed, help gets passed up, stories get covered up, and suffering gets silenced when we work on just competing to have the better podcast, have the better blog, have the better whatever. It loses sight of the mission, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. And so the first book that I was going to talk about was The Wounds Within. I've done another episode on this one by Nickerson and Goldstein. And there's a section at the end of the book that covers women and war trauma, noting that while women are less likely to kill in combat, they more often serve in positions that have high rates of PTSD, such as medics. And I wanted to bring that up because talking about women and PTSD in the same thing seems to piss a lot of people off because there's still a lot of people that tie PTSD to being the combat war disorder. And one of the references or examples, I should say, that Goldstein and Nickerson give is Vietnam and how many of the women that suffered from PTSD during and after the war were the nurses. So even the combat arms positions that haven't been open long, that doesn't mean that women haven't had roles in combat zones or in war and therefore struggle with things like post-traumatic stress. You do not have to have a combat MOS to get caught up in the horrible things that take place at times of war. Things happen. You don't even have to go outside the wire to have horrible things happen to you. That is just part of war. That's part of life. Things happen. So why bring that up? This is where one obvious difference in treatment is seen, not just in women not being able to talk about PTSD from deployments or I guess anything, because there are people that believe women cannot experience trauma in a combat zone or anywhere else in life. But where women are not acknowledged the same way for their presence in combat. So real quick, before getting into this, I want to note that The Wounds Within was published in 2015. So some of the information I cover or use as an example, maybe things that have changed, such as with the VA, but I think the differences that have existed are still important to note so that people understand where the fight for change and I guess the treatment options, stuff like that, where that came from. Just because there are too many people out there that just don't understand or continue to disregard that unequal treatment takes place. In The Wounds Within, a female veteran with multiple deployments is brought up, and she's compared to a male veteran who had also deployed, and both were exposed to actual combat. And in her case, it was that she saw a kid killed and she did have to fire her weapon at someone over there. They didn't really specify, but she did have the combat experience. And both veterans filed for disability compensation for having PTSD after returning from combat. And the male soldier was given, or the male veteran, was given 70% for his PTSD, and she was given 30%. Why? Because she was attached to a combat unit, so her records did not indicate that she had experienced combat. And the VA did her one better. They denied her from the inpatient PTSD program they offered because she couldn't be housed with the men. So only the men had the benefit of using that program. And apparently that's something that the VA felt was okay on the civilian end, but we do that in our service. I definitely shared housing areas with men while I was in the military. So why we feel that that can't continue on the veteran end is beyond me, but that was a thing at one point, if it's not still a thing. And there are VA programs available for women. It's not that they don't exist. The issue is that a lot of times it's a matter of having little space or very few resources, and budgeting is available to them. For instance, at one point, the VA could only house about 600 women a year in these programs nationally. And that might seem like a lot, 600 women a year. But that's, you know, you have to consider that there were 2 million women veterans at that time. Many were just, I guess you could say, out of luck when it came to receiving help from these programs. And, you know, what does that lead to? Suicide, homelessness, prolonged suffering, and just the idea of feeling invisible. The second book being covered in this episode is Kate Germano's Fight Like a Girl. And I absolutely loved and loathed this book because of how I could relate to it. I knew exactly what she was talking about, but unfortunately it was about all the shitty things many of us women go through. And if you are unfamiliar with who Kate Germano is, she was an officer in the Marine Corps for 20 years. If you Google her, you're going to see a lot about the controversial ending to her career. That's really what they focus on. In 20 years, it's the last year, basically, that you're going to learn about. And in her book, she mentions how many of us are set up for failure. In my book, Bottled Away, I make the comment about how you sort of are damned if you do, damned if you don't. There really is no right answer or action when you are a woman in the military, because you're going to piss someone off regardless. And Germano talks about the things we do to try and fit in and to be part of the tribe and to attempt to be seen as one of the guys, and how these things like cussing, yelling, being aggressive, stuff like that, doing what the guys do, how that works against us and kind of leaves us just being labeled as mean or as a bitch or whatever. And apparently nobody likes those. I'm pretty sure you've probably figured that out on your own. If you were somebody that tried doing those things to assert yourself in a unit or something, but basically you're expected to still act like a woman, but everyone wants you to man up. So it's like, what do I do? You're also met with many scenarios when the men either around you or above you are just waiting for you to fail because they either don't like you or they just don't believe that you belong there in the military or just in the job. I mean, it happens in the civilian world too. But the problem women face in the military doesn't always come from the men. Many times the issue comes from other women. And I've mentioned in my podcast and books how women seem to shun other women because it made it easier to be part of that male tribe. And in Fight Like a Girl, Germano mentions the issue with one of her examples is regarding the female drill instructors in the Marine Corps and how they felt that the new recruits and even the new instructors needed to pay their dues and suffer as they had. So rather than change things so others don't face the same hell that you did, it's about making sure that nothing changes so that those who faced hell get their opportunity to force that hell on the next person in line. And you see cases of this when women are in leadership positions, both in and out of the military. They use their rank, power, or their position to make things worse for the women below them, and they make it a habit of treating other females worse than the males. When I was in the Army, one of the first things I noticed after I left basic training was that women did not mentor other women, didn't even give any examples or scenarios of what the women below them were going to go through. Like, there was no like, hey, you might want to watch out for this stuff. None of that. They did not help their sisters get ahead. And that is something I even experienced in the civilian workforce as well. And Germano makes a comment in her book that I have found to be very true. And that is that as you move up the chain of command, there is even more pressure to conform to be part of the tribe. So as we gain power, we tend not to use it to reach back and help other women. And you'll see a lot of bullying to many women. And that is seen as kind of like a masculine quality. So it's another one of those things that women do to try to fit in a lot of times, especially in places like the military. And I experienced a lot of relational aggression while I was in the Army. And when I was new to a unit, I would have to deal usually with other female soldiers doing sort of like a smear campaign, or you'd have to survive through the rumors or doing whatever they wanted to do to try to get people to see you a certain way. And usually you were painted as a whore, slut, bitch, mean, hard to work with, something like that. And what stemmed from that is men just assume that women can't get along or that we can't work in a team, that we're just all drama, and therefore become the issue in the military. It's a real easy target to point all the problems at. And then, you know, we become the distraction or we're considered the weak link. And along with that relational aggression, I also dealt with a ton of mobbing techniques where you have groups of women, typically where they gang up on you and they try to intimidate, humiliate, isolate, discredit your story, your reputation, something like that. And the thing about that is it shouldn't be a thing. And it's simple, really. We already put up with a ton of shit from men who don't think we belong or believe we are incapable of performing. And rather than work together to prove otherwise or just to survive, we just make things harder for each other. And the sad thing is, and this is something I definitely found out the hard way, is that you can act tough, act like a badass, you can redirect the attention to others, bully, manipulate, or just bust your ass to meet standards, to be strong, to keep up, to show you're capable, and none of that guarantees you're going to be part of the team. It's not going to guarantee that you're going to be considered part of the tribe. And it doesn't even guarantee that you won't be harassed, assaulted, or pressured by the people you're trying to prove yourself to. Now, the last book I wanted to cover in this episode was Combat Vet Don't Mean Crazy, which is by Dwayne France, who is also a veteran. And while he doesn't cover much in regards to female veterans and service members directly, I do think he makes some points that I can use to kind of feed into this topic in this episode. I've watched many female veterans get torn apart on social media for speaking up about mistreatment, harassment, military sexual trauma, et cetera. I've watched many male vets lash out at women for doing what works for them in terms of coping and healing and moving on from the trauma they experienced during their service. And I've had my fair share of angry emails and DMs from guys telling me that my writing sucks, my podcast is bullshit, my mission is trash, and that I don't deserve to even have the veteran label because I play victim and I'm a crybaby, apparently. And my thing is, within the veteran community, I can say that I have experienced an immeasurable amount of hate. There are great people, great organizations, there are great causes in this community, but damn, it only takes a few to spoil a great thing. And this is where I feel France's book comes into play in this conversation. France mentions that we tend to wear our failures as a second skin, which tends to lead us to do these things, to believe we deserve what we get, to place blame or shame on ourselves that only makes things worse, and or to direct anger towards others, which is what I think I've dealt with the most in the veteran community, is having people lash out because they won't fix their shit, so they take it out on you. And I tend to be one of those people who can, I can do 100 things right, but that one mistake I make is going to be what eats at me and takes all my focus. And I know a lot of veterans do this. I think people in general do this more often than we recognize. And we focus on our failures and we get stuck looking back more often than looking forward. Rather than change what is going on in our lives, we focus on what we could have changed in the past to avoid something or being where we were, or to change some unwanted thing from happening. And I tend to dwell on that moment when I made it to my first duty station. And for years, I thought about what I could have done differently to have avoided things like MST. And then I started thinking, well, maybe if I had done this in basic, I wouldn't have ended up at that post. Or if I had enlisted when I had initially meant to, everything could have changed. It would have all been different. I would have been serving around different people. And this is the thing. You can keep chasing those memories and keep working out scenarios in your head, but it doesn't change a damn thing in the now. And even though I met some crappy situations during my time in the Army was what I knew, and that pain and stress is what I know, that survival is what I know. And so even though it causes me pain and suffering to look back and think about it, I hold on to it, and I hold on tight as shit. And again, something many veterans do is that, like, we just won't let go of that stuff. And we hold on to what we know, and that is our service. And we hold on to the familiar, which isn't always part of the service, but it's the things that get tied to it, like the anxiety, our kind of proclivity for isolation. Like, what we tend to strive for is to isolate ourselves in tough situations or when we're struggling so that nobody sees it. And that anger, we get used to holding on to that anger, and it's just one of our go-to things. And so what happens then is those emotions and the uncomfortable traits take over and control our lives because people choose to not change or confront what struggles they are having. So they just continue them. And I mean, think of the things you have done to cope in the past. Was it healthy or did it make stuff worse? I know I drank myself to pretty much numbness. I drank to forget. I self-harmed to redirect the pain and to try to hide emotional pain with the physical pain. I used prescription drugs and painkillers to mask what I was feeling or suffering from, and even ended up in a domestic violence situation that took a long time to get out of because I had convinced myself that because I, in my mind, was a bad soldier, that I was supposed to, like, I was meant to be in that situation. I deserved to be abused at home because I had sucked in the military, even though I've talked to plenty of leaders and people that served with me that said I wasn't this crappy soldier that I've concocted in my head. But because I held on to that perspective of myself, or that perception of how I felt as a soldier, I let it creep into my life as a veteran and cause issues for me. And did it change anything in my life for the better? Nope. Something France says in Combat Vet Don't Mean Crazy is our lives didn't peak on the mountaintop in Afghanistan. They do if we think it did. And if that is the ultimate achievement in your life, everything else is downhill and meaningless. That's what we'll believe. Your best days are in front of you, not behind you. What does that have to do with women and the differences we face? In case you think I got off topic, which I kind of did, but it does tie back. I think a big thing that takes place on social media is people using anger and hate to stir up bullshit and attack people for no reason other than that someone is pissed about something they won't change, and mad that someone else is healing or feels good, mad that someone is doing better or isn't suffering like they are. And one thing I've heard a lot in the veteran community from other veterans is how hurt people hurt people. And stuff like that gets in the way of healing. We tear each other down for opening up and reaching out and for sharing stories that aren't always glamorous or epic tales of war. We're quick to lash out at those that challenge the views and opinions of others, or what others may hold of the service or of its members. And we attack those that show the dark side of the military service, and we tend to bully or harass those that point out the flaws in the system or weed out the ones making the service hell for others, and trash talk those that are asking nothing more than for accountability. My point in all this being, differences exist, and I don't think it's a bad thing for pointing that out. It's part of our experience, it's part of our transition, and it's part of our healing processes. If we can't even acknowledge what differences are faced in our service during our attempt to get care or throughout our transition, then we're going to completely disregard what people need to heal or to not kill themselves at the end of the day. We avoid necessary changes that aren't going to destroy the military or the VA or our stance in society. I don't know where the need to compete in everything or to tear people down for opposing views or shitting all over someone who had a different military or combat experience from you. I don't know where that came from, but if we want to see all veterans choose life and want all veterans to have the opportunity after their service to just live and just not keep adding to the suicide numbers, we need to understand all experiences that people have, male or female, and how that all kind of weaves together. And I know I say this every damn episode, it seems like nowadays, and it's not to sound like a broken record. It's because it seems like it's still something that needs to be said because it's still something that's not taking place. And as much as people can be against change, this is necessary. We must change how we treat each other, change our idea of what stories are valid or invalid, which experiences can be shared to tell the veteran's story. We all have different experiences, which leads to different perspectives. We all have something worth sharing, something somebody else can learn from. Everybody has struggled, stumbled, failed something at some point. How someone looks or where they served does not tell you anything about that person. It does not automatically discredit anything they have to offer. And I promise it isn't going to take away from your own story, identity, or ego if you take a moment to listen to somebody outside your circle or outside your tribe. Just a thought. Until next time, take care. Thanks for listening. If you would like to hear more episodes from Crew's Corner, make sure to subscribe. You can listen to episodes on Anchor, Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. If you would like to be featured on a future episode, please reach out to our Instagram page at Crew's_Corner.